Looking for work, better pay, better work environment? We can help. Call Kelly Jobs today at 502-425-7131 to speak with a recruiter today. Score a better job with us. Call 502-425-7131 or visit kellyjobs.com. That's kellyjobs.com.
UPS is hiring Daysort warehouse workers in our Louisville, Kentucky hub. Our warehouses are team settings where everyone truly has each other's backs, and we work together to deliver what matters to customers and communities. We're paying $20 an hour and offer great benefits, including up to $25,000 in tuition assistance. Eligibility begins the day you're hired. Shift your future, shift your team, shift your life. Visit upsjobs.com to apply. That's upsjobs.com. Make the shift, make a difference.
Injured in a car accident? Visit SueDistractedDriver.com.
Be a part of the show. Text Bobby V on the UPS Jobs text line at 437-9680.
Well, I get to welcome a fellow coach into the program, which is always great fun. And we've known each other for quite a while, but I haven't had a chance to see him in a while. He's now currently working as the head coach at Collegiate. You know him from his tenure before as an assistant here at the University of Louisville. He worked the last 3 years as an associate head coach at Southeastern Louisiana. He was in Florida for a while. He's been well-traveled, but as I said, now coaching at Collegiate. And Mark Lieberman joins us right now and getting rave reviews for the days you sat in the host's chair here, Mark. So congratulations. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Bob. Great to have you back on the air. I always enjoyed our chats on the Louisville team bus, so I miss those days, but it's great to talk to you today.
You're in a rebuilding situation at Collegiate. I know that the team finished 11-17 last year, but I mean nothing, and no disrespect, I'm not in any way trying to minimize anybody who's trying to build a program that had been losing, having been in that situation myself when, at Division III, at Division II, whether it's high school, whatever. I mean, there are principles that are the same, but in fairness, there is some uniqueness to what's going on here at Louisville as well, with the exodus of players and the NCAA sanctions that were hanging over the program's head for so long. It's made it a little bit unusual. But there are some things that are similar. And I always said, I want to throw this at you because I want to know what your philosophy is. I always say when you're rebuilding a program, it's four steps. First step, you got to be competitive, and you should be that way from the day you start. Doesn't matter how bad they were the year before, you got to be competitive. The second thing is you must improve. You got to show improvement. And you know, so if you are horrible, then you got to be less horrible. If you were competitive, then you got to climb the ladder. But no matter where you were, you got to get better. The third thing is you got to eventually get to the point where you win. Then the fourth thing is you got to maintain the winning. That's how you build a program. You got to be competitive, you got to improve, you got to win, then you got to maintain it. What's your philosophy?
You're spot on, and you're talking about being competitive, and that's something you have to instill from day one, and that's something you want. That's something that you want your players to understand how hard they have to play on every possession. And that's a process. That's something, especially when kids haven't understood that. And let's just take the game last night, for example, even with Louisville, something that encapsulates their kind of competitiveness. There's a 10-minute mark. There's a loose ball. You see Withers, and obviously Coach Payne wants him to be first to the floor. You can almost see the look on Coach Payne's face that he's not diving for that loose ball. Then you have Hersey Miller not boxing out, and you have Jameer Young just drive in and tip the basketball in. And those are just two plays right there that talk about competition and having your players compete on every play. And obviously that's something they'll go back and they'll watch the film and so on. Those two plays, you know, coaches are helpless. You understand that, Bob. When the game starts, there's certain things you can't do. As that play's going on, that's just as a coach, that's just stuff that says, okay, we're trying to find an identity. Right there is a perfect example of what you want your team to do. I had the same thing. Look, we played last night. When I get back to the school today, I got about 19 clips to show our guys of what they have to do to understand how hard you have to compete on every single play. Whether you're not in a stance, whether you're off the ball, all the little things that affect winning, you know, that's competitiveness. And if you don't establish that, the other stuff doesn't matter. You know, whether you get, you know, talk about showing improvement and getting wins, and Coach Payne is talking about that, and you know, you feel for him, and I've heard you talk about him. I've been able to attend practices. You know, he's gracious. He wants to get it done. It's for people out there, and I've talked about it. Look, yeah, he wants to win. He wants to have a program, But if you don't have your guys competing on every single play, it's just not going to work.
The other thing I find that's interesting is eventually, as weird as it is, there's a book called The Tipping Point. Have you ever read it?
Mm-hmm.
It's fascinating. Yeah, okay, so then you know the premise behind it, which is a lot of people think like the world goes, if you go from somewhere to somewhere else, you go like a nice, gentle bell curve. You know, that's how it goes. You start here and you gradually go up. And what the book, to oversimplify it, the premise is something happens in the progress of the process of whatever's going on that is called the tipping point, and it doesn't go in a nice gentle curve. It goes like, if we're going to use numbers on a graph, let's just say it's going, you know, 0 1 0 1 2 3, and you think it would go 0 1 5 10 15. It doesn't go that way. It goes 0 1 2 4 6 8 2 4, and then all of a sudden something happens and it goes whoop 80. And you go, how the hell did that happen? What is the tipping point? And that's what this book documents, what the tipping points are, how they come about. And that's what we should all be looking for. I found, and I'm curious to see what your response is, something happens with teams that way too. That you keep talking and you feel like you're getting nowhere, that it's 0 1 2 4, this mindset of competitiveness and diving for loose balls, and then all of a sudden something happens where everybody's doing it, and you don't even realize it. It's like you're not even thinking about it anymore. It's just expected. The ball's loose, you're going to dive for it. There's a rebound, you're going to get a body on a body, you're going to check out, you're going to go compete and battle for it. And I think the problem is, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, even coaches don't know what that tipping point is. We don't know what makes that happen. We just keep trying and push and push and push because we know it's out there. And then eventually when it happens, everybody's bought in and they're all on the same page. And it's fat. And you don't even realize. You suddenly turn around one day and you're looking like, man, all these guys are diving and running. But the problem is, you know, if you or I knew what it was, we'd bottle it and we'd be millionaires.
Exactly. But
that's the problem, isn't it?
Right. You know, when does it click in? And you know this from coaching, it's not what you teach, it's what you emphasize. It goes back to, if you let it go, if there's just that one time in the practice and you kind of let it go, then maybe that just grows and grows and grows, and it doesn't sink into the players. That's something that you just, every single time, there's just a little thing. It might annoy people, it might annoy the players, it might be that they're not happy with you stopping practice every 2 minutes.
Right.
But you know what? You have to do that. When there's that, just that one time when you didn't blitz out on the screen, when you didn't check out the guy on the wing, when you didn't dive for the loose ball like we talked about, when you didn't make just that hustle play and sprint back and not be sensitive on the offensive end. I heard you talk about that as well. And that's a hard thing to get guys to understand. If you're not scoring, not to be offensive sensitive, sprinting back every single time and making a play. Because you've seen that, you know, that defensive trot when there's a missed shot and all of a sudden teams that will just get down the floor, that can affect you. But that just goes back to every single day, it has to be established. It sounds simplistic, but I believe that every single play has to be stopped in a practice setting for those guys to get to that tipping point to say, okay, we've got over the hump, the epiphany, however you want to describe it, it sinks into the players and they understand what you expect, because you know how hard it is to get what you know to translate to the players and then translate to the floor.
Yeah, that's well said. Mark Lieberman with us here, the coach at Collegiate. He's talking about rebuilding programs. Let's talk a little specifics if we can.
Sure.
I this again is a philosophy. I'm not advocating that I'm right or somebody who views something else is wrong or vice versa. But I think when you come into a situation like Kenny right now, and you were at practice, as you said, I think it's pretty obvious he does have a vision how he wants him to play, and he is kind of taking the whole approach. I'm going to throw the whole thing at them, and I want you to, and then I'll, you know, ride it out. And he's talked about how, well, obviously he's trying to win games, but it's not about wins right now. It's about the understanding how we want to play and being confident and all of those things. And that's true, and that's great. But I think at some point you don't have to, but I would, and don't apologize for it, that I would, if I was in that first year, I have to hate to use the term, but it is, you have to make a deal with the devil, which is to say, look, this is not the way I'm going to want to play down the road, but I also don't want to get my ass kicked by 25 points every night, so I'm going to do some things that are going to, I may junk up the game, I may shorten the game, I may play some gimmick defenses, I may run 800 sets every time they come down the floor. I'm going to run a set because I want to make sure I'm getting the ball in the guy's hands where I want it, because they can't do it yet. It's not like they're not trying. That's the thing that bothers me. I was at practice. The kids are trying. It's not like that. At least, I don't know, maybe last night I wasn't there, so I don't know, maybe they tuned them out, but I don't think so. They're trying. They're frustrated. They don't have answers. So it's not like they're ignoring him. They can't figure out how to get it done. And the problem is, you know, Mark, I really mean this. I've said it half kiddingly, but it's true. I think they have too many good players on their staff. They can't relate to guys who don't know how to get things done. They why can't you just do this? Danny Manning, I did it. You know, Nolan Smith, I did it. You know, Kenny Payne, I did it. Well, that's great, but they can't do it. They don't understand how to do it. They don't have the physical makeup necessarily, or the experience. They certainly don't have the experience. And so you kind of got to, maybe, for lack of a better word, you know, spoon feed them a little bit more. And great players hate to be spoon fed, so that would probably rankle the coaching staff. But the fact is, sometimes don't you have to make a deal with the devil in the short term, or no?
You know, when Coach Pitino hired me, he loved the way my pace teams played. We played fast, we ran, we pressed, we did all the things that were similar to his philosophy. We used to talk basketball all the time, and you know, that's one of the reasons he brought me on. And even my first month or two, I'm doing a lot of defensive drills. We're doing presses and so on. And in my situation now, I could be stubborn and say, well, we're going to play the same way. And it's just not going to work.
Right.
I don't have the players that can play that style. And, yeah, you have to – it's a tough thing as a coach. And now we're talking about Kenny Payne's situation. He hasn't been in that position before. He's going from the second chair to the first chair. And there's so many things that are just going on during the game that fans just can't imagine. You know, you're correcting, teaching, out-of-bounds plays calls, you know, and you're playing, holding the players accountable on the fly. So, you know, that's in a game, and it's a lot different when you're sitting a chair over and you can watch film and then you can make suggestions. So at this point, in this juncture for this Louisville team, yeah, I think they're trying to find out how they can turn what they have into a product that can win some games, whether it's pressing, whether it's more zone, whether it's running offensive. You know, you talked about the ball screens. Really, the only person they're using in ball screens is LLs, because he's the only one who can use them. But now getting to understand, hey, we're always going to try and come off that and hit the lift and then look for dribble handoffs and look for different things. But that's a hard thing, because you have a guy like Kenny Payne who really is trying to get it done and has a vision and has been around Kentucky and professional players and so on. He has a group that's not like that. So, yes, it's a tough thing. We all have egos as coaches. We all believe we can do it no matter what the naysayers say.
Right.
But, you know, that is just not the case. So for him to say, okay, let's take a deep dive into what we have. Let's evaluate our personnel in every aspect. Have your staff look at every little nuance as far as film goes and say, maybe this will work, maybe we try this. And maybe it's game to game. Maybe you take the Bill Belichick method. And Coach Pitino was the same way. We guarded things differently,
yes,
game to game, and
yep,
based on personnel, based on who we were playing. Maybe that's something they want to look at and say, okay, let's try this. Maybe this will give us the results we want.
Yeah, I do like that. See, I think that I was admired that about Rick, and you know, you worked firsthand with him, so you'd know. I mean, he got teams that were wound up being very strong teams in whatever league they were in very quickly. But he always had a little bit of that rebuilder's mindset, you know, which was,
right,
like you said, I'm coming in and it's not a matter of we're going to Green Bay Packer you. Here comes the sweep. Try and stop it. No, he was always, all right, for you, we'll defend this way. For you, we'll defend this other way. You know, whatever it is you've got, we're going to try and have a counter for it and not just say we're going to just come out and roll the balls,
sure,
out and be able to stomp you to death. And you know, I think that's what this that's part of the problem, though, don't you think, is that they got to find something that they can hang their hat on.
Bob, you know, that's
thing.
That's the paradox of coaching, because it's like, all right, this is going to work. We're going to do what we do. And that's okay if you have the talent. If hey, we're just going to do it, and we're not going to – we don't need to watch as much film, because we're just going to play the way we play, and it's going,
right,
to work. in this situation, yeah, they've, maybe it's taking a step back and saying, all right, let's evaluate everything we're doing. And the hardest thing for coaches to do at this point is to kind of change that and say, okay, yeah. Because then the players are like, well, is our philosophy different? Is this something right. we don't believe in? But it does hark back to what you said initially. Nothing changes as far as being competitive. Whether you play zone, whether you play man, whether you right. press, whether you sag, whether you play pack line, as I'm making that comment for Nick. And so we get a comment from – I forgot yeah, who is it?
Painter Chris.
Painter always, Chris. Yeah. I try and make a point to always work in pack line.
But drops his paintbrush in angst.
But, Bob, you understand. It's we're creatures of habit as coaches. We believe in something, and it's so hard to make that change. Change is like moving mountains. But at times, it's what can help your team because right now, like you said, making that deal with the devil and just finding a way to eke out wins – well, maybe there's different ways to do it right now until he gets the players in position, recruiting-wise, transfer portal, what have you, that can fit the style of play he wants.
We'll take a break. I got some more specific questions I want to get into here. Mark Lieber, nice enough to sit in with us for a little bit. He's busily getting ready his own team. They played last night.
We won't talk about that, Bob.
Okay, I didn't ask you about it. Frankly, I was already warned by Nick that that's taboo. Let's not go into that topic. But we will talk about a couple of other things. And I think it's – listen, you can speak for yourself. You already do. But this is what coaches do. It's not us second guessing. It's not us saying right or wrong. Well, Kenny's wrong. I always said this. If you brought in, if you could go back and turn back time and bring guys back from the dead, and you put Dean Smith and John Wooden and some current guys, and you put, Mike Krzyzewski and, Bill Self, and put them all and gave them 10 players, just 10 generic players, and put them in a room and said, okay, you have 3 months to work with these guys, and then we'll come out and see what you get. You'd get 10 different products. I mean, right. There'd be some similarities. I mean, if one of the guys you gave them was, to play was Kareem Jabbar, they certainly would have some sort of low post option in there. But my point is, there are certain things that are wrong. There's no question. But if you got 10 great coaches that know what they're doing, they could do things different ways. So when we throw things about here, we're just suggesting, gee, I wonder what this might be, or would Kenny consider this? And Kenny, to his credit, answers everything. I mean, he doesn't take anything right. personally. It's like somehow you're trying to undermine him, which I love. I mean, he's kind of told me – Rick told me that too, which I loved. He said, you can ask me anything you want in the postgame. So generally we did. And the people like that because all they want to know is, did you consider this? Did you rule it out? Why did you do – that's what I always try and do when I'm doing analysis for a game. I see guys and they say, well, here's what I would do here. Well, great, but you're not coaching this game. We don't really care what the hell you do. Tell me why you think he's doing what he's doing. Why is he doing that? What you were at practice, what was his philosophy behind it? And so, Mark, you'd appreciate this, I think. I get to go to walkthroughs and shoot arounds, and so I would go see Cal. You can agree or disagree, but his approach, especially when he had so many one-and-dones, was always, look, that's why he always uses the term, we got to play basketball. You got to learn how to play basketball, because he was smart enough to know that there's no way they're going to learn the entire opposition's offense, in a day. So he would teach them, option one, option two, and then he would say, all right, now at this point, now we just play basketball. This is what they're going to be trying to get. We got to try and take it away. And I always thought, well, you don't have to agree with it, but at least I understand why he's doing it. He would say, we have 2 days. We just played Kansas. We got 2 days to prepare for playing Duke, and they're not going to learn their whole offense in 2 days. So exactly. let's go through this, take away A, take away B, and then let's play basketball. So that's what you got to try and come across with. And I want to talk to you about what your thoughts would be. Again, understanding, we're not second-guessing, but if you were in his shoes, what might you do with the personnel that he's got at his disposal? We'll talk about that when we come back. It is a We Want to Know Wednesday on The V Show on ESPN 680 105.7.
You're listening to The V Show, broadcasting live from the Liquor Barn Studios, right here on ESPN 680 and 105.7. Now, here's Bobby V.
Guy who has had more than his share of success as a head coach at the high school level, our guest, our co-host, however you want to refer to him, Mark Lieberman, of course, He was the head coach at Monsignor Pace. That's what he alluded to earlier when he said, when I was at Pace. 5 Florida State championships, once as an assistant. 3 runner-up finishes, 335 and 95 Florida High School Coach of the Year on 3 occasions. Very, very long and distinguished history. We're glad to have him with us. So having said that, let's put your, excuse me, I've got cough off the air.
Well, Bob, if I may, just what a great intro with your son Nick playing Bittersweet Symphony.
Thank you.
I requested some 90s music. And one more comment, your reference to As Good As It Gets, a great movie. And maybe at the end of the show or even off the air, Bob, I'd like your top 5 Jack Nicholson movies.
Wow. Oh, I could do that, I think.
That'd be a good one.
I can bust that out, I think. And that'll be, he gets the show. Mark Lieberman gets the show, jumping right in. You take this team. We put you in, and we give you the team right now. Just some general things. Again, you know, until you get on the practice floor and really watch and see how guys work and who can grasp what and blah, blah, blah. But a couple of things, specific questions. Do you just keep riding L at point guard, or do you give the other guys a chance and say, what the hell, you know, we haven't gotten much done with him playing the point. Let's put him off the ball more and let these other guys, let's see what we can get out of them. What do you do with the other guys?
Sure.
And what do you do with that situation?
I think one of the biggest things right now with L. Ellis is on the defensive side, obviously how many minutes he's playing, he can't provide that pressure up top. It's difficult for him just to you know, and you want your player to be in the kind of shape that he could play 40 minutes, but it's unrealistic. He's probably the only player right now in the roster who's effective navigating ball screens and creating, but a lot of it is creating for himself. I heard Luke Hancock make the point about, you know, he's getting points, but he's got to find a way for his team to win. Whatever it is for him, you got to spell him here and there, and you know, maybe it's before media timeout, you give him a break where it gets an extra 3, 4, 5 minutes of rest. But there's got to be a way to utilize him. They used him off the ball. I heard you talk about it, too. They used some baseline runners as well. But really, there really is a limited amount of options right now as far as that position goes.
I thought Hersey showed some signs to me out in Hawaii. And, I mean, it's not like he's going to be great, but I feel bad because I'm not trying to dump on L, but I mean, you got a guy, even if he's scoring 20 points, he's shooting, what was
exactly,
it, 6 for 16 with 8 turnovers. Mm-hmm. That's not getting anything done, really. I mean, so why not give another guy a chance there, maybe, and get some other guys involved?
Yeah, he had 4 turnovers last night, and I did love Hersey's energy in practice, getting to see it firsthand. You know, his practice was over, he comes over and introduces himself and has a great personality. Had that moxie on the practice floor that you liked. So, yeah, I would be able to use him here 5, 10, you know, 11 minutes and so on, because at this point, you know, with L. Ellis' situation and last night playing 32 minutes, we haven't even started ACC play. Mm-hmm. So there's going to have to be a way to find a way to get him some off-the-ball situations, to get him maybe where he can be more engaged defensively. But, yeah, there's got to be a way to implement Hersey into spell him here and there, for sure.
You were on the staff when Rick was running his mind-meld zone thing, weren't you?
Yes.
Okay. Would you mess around some stuff like that with this group?
You know, that's a great point, Bob. And you're watching them play zone right now, and I think they're struggling with it just for even the little nuances, when to bump and when to send guys. And just bumping means just trading players off.
Right.
And that's something. But with our zone, it was we always declared the ball. There was so much pressure when you have a Peyton and the Russ. Mm-hmm. So those guys just could not facilitate. We could redirect players. You know, we could dictate and dominate what they were going to do. Our zone was very aggressive. If they can get – and again, it goes back to what you talked about, being competitive. Whether you're playing zone, whether you're Jim Boeheim, whatever your defense you're in, you have to play it well and you have to play it hard. So is that an option? Sure. I know they've been messing around with some 2-2-1 and some zone. It just takes reps. It just takes understanding the whys of why you're getting into certain actions. If there's not a guy in the corner, you don't need to bump him or trade him off. And those are things that they just need to work on. And if they are going to go that route, that could be effective for them. And maybe that gets L. Ellis or a Hersey Miller to pressure the ball. That gets him to understand, because you know most players don't like to pressure the ball because they're worried about gap integrity. They're worried about getting beat off the bounce. In a matchup, in a zone, you know the help is automatically staring at the ball and seeing it. So that could maybe be a way that they can alleviate some of the blow-bys and the easy baskets for the opponents.
This is terrible because you don't want a coach to stay close. You got to try and win games. But having said that, we're still dealing with phase one here. They're still trying to figure out how to be competitive. I that's why I think it's almost irrelevant. This is going to sound almost ridiculous, but hear me out. It's almost irrelevant who your players are if you've got to bought into the fact that you're going to have to coach as if you are, frankly, a little shorthanded, because they are. They're shorthanded, especially when they get to ACC games. So if that's the case, you generally have to shorten games. I mean, I know that goes against every fiber of, like, a Rick Pitino's body, but that's what I think they'd have to – so I would think they could – they're going to have to junk the game up. They're going to have to play a little 2-2-1 nuisance press, not mm-hmm. really trying to – just try and make it so that you only have 15 seconds to work with on the shot clock, and then get back and, you know, try and hold on for dear life for those
right.
15 and, seconds, and then rebound like your life depends on it, and then, you know, come down and put guys in – I remember – I don't know if you're old enough to remember – but I mean, UB Brown, God bless him, because he's one of my coaching heroes and one of Rick's mentors. He coached the Knicks with Bernard King, and I'm fairly certain that he took it as a personal insult if anybody else but Bernard King shot the ball on that team. That was his bumper approach. They put Bernard on the right block, ran a flat cross screen for him, brought him across, threw it to him. He turned to the baseline. He turned to the middle. That's all they did, and it was great. And if you don't want to play that way, then don't play. Come sit next to me, because that's what we're doing. And everybody bought in, and that's the way it worked. There's got to be some simple over-and-over stuff that you could do with Jalen. Jalen's too good a player to mm-hmm. just be wandering around out there and shooting threes when the mood strikes him or whatever. There's got to be some stuff they could do with him and some stuff. Maybe, you know, go to Karl Malone and John Stockton school of thought. Just let him set ball screens for L and let him go and go cross screen and roll back or be the guy who gets the cross screen and just run it over and over, run it to death. I mean, and then like I said, aren't you reducing the number of things in the game? Because right now L's turned the ball over. They're all turned the ball over. So everybody's turned the ball over. Everybody's missing shots. Nobody can guard. Why not narrow it down a little bit? So instead of having to guard for 30 seconds, we have to guard a smaller periods of time, and the ball is only in certain spots on the floor, and it may not be the most exciting. I saw my brother do it when he had Lorenzo Charles. The year after they won the national championship, they had like nobody, and he ran basically the Bernard King offense for Lorenzo Charles. That's what they did. And so, I mean, what would your approach be? Would you say never over my dead body? Would you do that, or how do you feel about that?
I understand what you're saying, and you'd want the players to understand the play through Jalen Withers, but it as a coaching staff, you give them commands. You call it green, and you say it's green Jalen Withers, which means no matter what, on this possession, he's getting a touch.
Right.
And whether it's off of a ball screen, whether it's off a pin down or ISO him at the elbow where he can be creative with his size, then you do that. Where every time down the floor, hey, and all of a sudden now you have J.J. Traynor getting hot. It's green
yep.
J.J., and so
right.
we know he's going to get a touch, whether he's going to draw a foul because there's a mismatch or what have you. But there are little nuances you can do to get those players a touch rather than saying, hey, let's get J.J. the ball. Well, now we scream green, and we know it's green J.J. He's going to get the touch. He's going to make sure that he's going to step to the basketball, whether it's off cross-screen action or whatever, just getting him to the elbow and saying, okay, we'll enter it there and play off of that, whether we're playing off a handoff, whether we're playing off whatever weak side action you want, but you're getting him the ball, and that's a demand from the coaching staff, and then the players don't have to overthink the situation about, how do we get him the ball? They know he's going to get a touch.
I guess what I'm – and I get everything you're saying, and it makes perfect sense. We used to use the term rock. You used green. We used to use rock, whatever. Teams call different terms for whatever they want to make the same point that, you know, the ball better go to this guy before we do anything else. But I guess my point is just – and I know you're not suggesting that it would just be like let him run around wherever he wants mm-hmm. and just make sure he touches the ball in this possession. But I think they need even more narrow – guidelines. That's what I'm suggesting. I think that right now they need to be so. I honestly, that's my upbringing. I grew up on, Lou Carnesecca, and every game was 62-58. I mean, so, that's not anything to be proud of. But so I would run old school sets. I mean, I would just come down and have. Lon Kruger would envy me how many sets I'd have. I mean, I don't trust that they, believe themselves that they can get the shots you'd want them to get. Do you? Do you see a group out there that says, yeah, let us go, coach.
Yeah,
we'll get exactly the shots we want.
You want better players, not better plays. You want guys that can understand conceptually, schematically what you're trying to do. Right. Great teams don't have to run. And obviously the game has morphed into so much ball screen action. But there's different things you can do. You just said, and again, there's just different ways to get players the ball, and it can be simplistic. You don't have to reinvent the wheel basketball-wise.
Right.
Look, just get a guy to run to the rim really hard, and then you can have a drag screen, reverse it back, and call Green Withers, and he's the guy at the top, and now he can play high-low. He can go into a dribble handoff. You can get different, kind of create different things. It can be simplistic, but you got to get them to be competitive on the offensive end as well.
Well, that's true. I understand it. But I guess we're all just, as fans, tired of hearing they got to be tougher, they got to be more confident. Okay, it's one of two things is happening. Either then they're not trying and they've given up on you. And Nick, do you have that sound bite? Kenny alluding to that? Is Nick there or did he go bowling?
I got it.
Are you there?
I really
wasn't. All right. Let's start with that. Okay? Kind of it's one of two things then. Either you think they gave up, and that would be to addressed here by Coach Payne.
I really wasn't hoping for any kind of response. I just wanted the truth. I wanted them to be able to say their truth. And for the most part, they did. They said that they're not giving up. They said that there are times when adversity hits and they panic and they don't play together. They haven't understood fully how to handle adversity as a group, as a team, and that's one of the areas that they want to continue to try to get better at.
Okay, so they either, as I said, they've either given up, and if you take him at his word, he's eliminating that option. They haven't given up. Okay, so then, for whatever reason, they can't get done what needs to be done to be successful in that situation, which means that, as you said, you need better players. Well, I don't think there's a trade deadline coming up. This is who you got, so they're not going to make any trades. Or you've got to change your system, which is, even if it means, like I said, making a deal with the devil. And I think you hit it on the head. That was Lon Kruger. Lon Kruger had a million simple sets. That's what he did. I mean, I went to his practice. It was like a million little wrinkles here and a wrinkle there. And that's why I guess, I think that's asking too much. I guess that's why I keep wanting to move L off the ball, because I'm not in love with ball screens, to be honest with you, especially when you don't have great players. So get him off the ball and have a guy whose job is to just orchestrate all those little simple wrinkles, and then let L be a guy who you're running those simple wrinkles for, and run a bunch of simple wrinkles for Withers, and run a bunch of simple wrinkles for Huntley Hatfield. I mean, that kid's a good player. He came from Tennessee. It's not like he just got off the turnip truck. And then you got to fill in around them. I mean, and is that going to be great? Hell no, but it's going to be better than what we've got.
Just be really good at what you do. And if it's just as simple as a pin down, get the ball to the wing, get players to occupy the defenders so guys aren't just standing and ball watching, understanding to cut, to move, and so on. Mm-hmm. That's important. And if I may, just going back to even what, Coach Payne's press conference, this is – right after a game, right after a loss, sometimes you say things as a coach, especially for someone who is new at it from the standpoint of having to address the media after every game, something he hasn't been doing a lot of in his career, right? So
no,
for him to make those comments, I'm sure there's times he's saying, well, he's emotional, he's wearing his heart on his sleeve, he cares about the players, so he really does care about these guys. So he's saying some things that maybe he looks back and says, well, maybe I shouldn't have said that, or so on and so forth. Because I don't think he believes guys are quitting. But it's like right after the game, it's a press conference. And for coaches, sometimes they're in a fog. And sometimes if you're not polished from the standpoint of saying, okay, I've given 3,000 post-game press conferences. I know exactly what to say. It's difficult. So he's being as truthful as he can, and sometimes that can be misinterpreted by the media, by fans, and so on, because I think they're going to get back to just all the little things he keeps preaching. But we can't just take it as gospel what he says like right after a game. That's just my thoughts.
All right, here we go. I'm ready to answer your question.
Great.
I didn't see Chinatown, I'm sorry to say.
All right, well, then I'm just going to have to leave the studio right now. But okay, I'll...
Sorry.
Bob,
I knew you were going to say, because that's most people say the best movie he was ever
if
in.
If I could go back in time, I would have just shown it on one of those bus rides or plane rides. I would have just given you my computer and let you watch it. But continue, please.
All right. I'm an odd duck in many ways. I loved Broadcast News, even though he's not tremendously associated with
it. Oh, that movie's fantastic. Yes.
I love that film.
I haven't seen that one.
Oh, no. That's
you
got to
watch the Albert Brooks scene when he gets his first gig on the air. It's tremendous.
There's so many truths in that. I say it here, and it comes out there. Anyway, Holly Hunter, it must be great to always be the smartest person in the room. No, it's terrible. I love that line.
I thought Nick was my favorite Valvano, but that's changing quickly right now.
He had to leave for a little while.
One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest is absolutely on that list, so that's two. There's a bunch, again, you're going to get mad at me. He's going to want to slap me around. I never saw Five Easy Pieces. Don't hit me. I don't like movies that are scary, so I don't care for The Shining, so I don't even if you think it's the greatest film ever made.
I don't. I'm not a horror movie guy. But his performance was iconic in that movie.
Yeah, that's true. I'm sorry, I'm a little softy. I'm a rom-com kind of guy. I loved As Good As It Gets. I thought that was fantastic.
It was great.
That was great. So I would put three on there. He was absolutely A Few Good Men is number four for me. I've been having a hard time deciding on number five. I'll let you nominate number five, and then you tell me, and I'll say I agree or I disagree. What should be my fifth one?
I think this could be content one way or the other, but The Departed?
Well, that was my choice. Nick just...
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I'm afraid the answer is you haven't seen that.
No, I haven't. You're right.
Well, but I'll tell you what you're going to be doing tonight then, Bob.
Well, one I have seen that I love, that it's fantastic. Pritzi's Honor makes me laugh out loud.
That's a great call.
I might make that number five.
I think you should do a double feature tonight, Pritzi's Honor and then The Departed. I think that's the way to go for this evening's entertainment.
What is The Departed about before I commit myself?
It is it's based on the
Irish mob.
The Irish mob, but it's based on the character who's the Black Mass, the movie that Johnny Depp did. It's kind of like a version of him. Anyway,
I know what you're talking about.
You've got
but
DiCaprio.
It's a Scorsese movie, yes, for what it's worth.
Leonardo DiCaprio. You got Matt Damon. It is fantastic.
I'm going to have to move somebody. I love his Joker. He's got to be on for his role as Batman. That was outstanding.
That's a good point. I forgot about
that.
I had that on there. Listen,
wait
your choice
get
is
a load of me.
It's
plus
hard to narrow it to five. That's
really
difficult.
Is. Yeah. Anyway, well, it was a good topic. Nice work out of you, man. If that coaching gig ever falls apart, and you got a career to fall back on, brother. So
that's good to hear.
I'm going to come see your team. I'm going to find a night to come see your team.
I would love that.
And then we'll
go watch The Departed.
it's making dates. All right, unless you know something on it, we'll see you tomorrow, everybody. Thanks for being with us on ESPN 680 105.7.
Tired of eating the same homemade meals over and over again? Want to switch it up? LocallyOwnedDelivery.com safely brings the restaurants to you. Breakfast, lunch, or dinner, they'll bring it to you. Delivery.com delivers some of the finest restaurants in Metro Louisville. Miss going out to eat but still want to support your favorite restaurants? Delivery.com has got you covered. Use promo code ORDERNOW for $10 off your next order. Sit back, relax. Your meal's on its way. Delivery.com. We bring the restaurants to you.
Tired of jumping from job to job? How about a career in a recession-proof industry where you can make a difference and help create a healthier living and working environment? The pest management industry gives you the opportunity to work with more independence. OPC Pest Services will give you a chance to grow with advancement. Come be a part of our team at OPC Pest Services. Apply online at opcpest.com/careers. That's opcpest.com/careers.
Injured in a car accident? Visit suedistracteddriver.com.